What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another brand new Robbie Master podcast. I think I'm a little bit too close to this microphone. Doesn't matter. I'm your host, as always, TJ, and in this episode, we are joined by TK Terrence Kennell, physical prep coach of the Houston Astros baseball team, or baseball franchise, actually, as we find out. This is an awesome interview. You guys are in for a real treat here because TK is well-traveled, been rugby coaching around the world. He used to coach over at Richmond in the UK and also over in Japan as well. And this dude has a wealth of experience. We get into talking about all the different things and different demands of a rugby player, of a athlete in general in the gym. We also talk about his background in strength and conditioning and how he made a full-time career out of it, because that seems to be a topic that you guys like to find out a little bit more information about. So we dive into that a little bit more. And then we also discuss his nearly 70-pound weight loss that he underwent. Whatever, he lost over nearly 70 pounds, well over 60 pounds. And I figured, you know, from a strength and conditioning expert rather than a dieting expert, it was really interesting to see his insights and hear about exactly how he brought about those, you know, that massive weight loss and physique transformation whilst keeping the majority of his strength and where his priorities lay out now. This isn't so much of an interview as it is just a good chat between the two of us. And like, there are so many knowledge bombs. I really do think you guys will appreciate this episode. So if you do enjoy it, it would be great if you went over to iTunes or whatever your podcast platform is, gave us a 5-star review. And if you type up a quick review, like, you know, you just type up a few words, say, if you know, a little bit of a critical review, whatever you think of it, I will give you a shout out on the podcast. And actually, if you do that, again, I'll shoot you an email or I get you to reach out to me and we'll hook you up with some sort of treat. It varies week to week, depending on when you listen to this podcast. Another great way that you can help us out, because it is just me doing this podcast, so even when I say us, I mean us, the company, but again, the company is just me. It'd be great if you just would screenshot the podcast and put it on your Instagram stories. That really does help us spread the word as well. If you do that, tag at Robbie Muscle Podcast. Nope, just tag at Robbie Muscle and tag at tj.strength, and we will go from there. This is a really awesome episode, so I'm done talking anymore. If you like any more information, rugby-muscle.com is where it's at. Otherwise, let's get into this episode. It's episode 123 with T. Kennell, physical prep coach. All right, guys, so we are live with TK Terrence Kennell.
Kennell.
Yeah, Terrence Kennell, physical prep coach. TK, I've already, like, given you a big intro beforehand, but if you can give us like one sentence to sort of describe yourself.
Strength conditioning coach, physical preparation, sports performance, whatever word you want to throw around to the title. We're currently working for the Houston Astros, so that's baseball. We're a professional baseball team as an affiliate coach, because they have like a farm system essentially. And then been in strength conditioning now for maybe 6 years.
It's not
too long at all. I like to travel around. I love new experiences and new challenges, which is why I'm in baseball. So I've actually never worked in baseball before until January when I started.
Nice.
Yeah. And then, so that's it for my end.
Sweet, man. There's already questions I have going for you. So you said you've been in this for 6 years now. So did you start off in college?
Yeah. So it's funny, I say 6 years, but so I started off when I was like 19. I was living in North Carolina for a summer, so in this little beach town. And I needed a way to make money. And I knew I wanted to be a strength conditioning coach, but I didn't know how to really go about kind of getting into that field. And I was studying that in uni.
Yeah.
As I was like working out, training myself, like getting ready for like rugby season of coming at Arkansas State, there was just like this group of kids who also would see me train every day and wanted to train with me. Like outside, like run with me, do like speed stuff with me, which my speed stuff then was atrocious. But
probably better than what they were doing though, right?
Well, yeah, they're just doing nothing most of the time.
Exactly.
So they just joined in, and then I worked at this like little private facility there. Who just like hired me on because they saw me train these like 5 or 6 kids like every other day outside, and then they let me take them in like in the gym, using like the track they had in there, and like their little turf and stuff like that. I did a bunch of body weight stuff. So they were like, the kids ranged from 11 to 14. And I'm just like, I don't really feel like I should be like putting on weights on these kids. I was like, so we'll just do a bunch of body weight stuff. So like, they did a bunch of bear crawls and rolls and iso holds and wall sits and
splits. Nice.
Stuff like that, yeah.
Old school. That's awesome. So that was when you were at Arkansas State.
Yeah.
You've now since, did you help coach out those guys? I remember Connor Cook told me that you helped out with their programming and stuff.
Oh, you know Cookie?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, small. I didn't know that. I didn't know you knew each other. I guess he's in Denver as well. But yeah, I was like there. I was a player and strength coach, essentially. So I was like doing a lot of programming in the gym. I was doing like our speed stuff also. And then doing my last year, last 2 years, I was helping with a lot of conditioning and stuff like that. So I had to say what conditioning was.
Nice, man. Cool. Yeah. All right. So first question I've got to ask you, I want to know that. So you've done it. You've been in strength and conditioning for 6 years now. Quickly go over all the different places that you've been and the influences that you've got from said places, I guess.
All right. So coming from Arkansas State, I think it's going to my senior year to the summer. So about three to four months. I went over to Japan. I was looking to get an internship under Kirwin and Flat, goes by like rugby strength coach on Instagram and like Twitter. And so I was there working with him on a pro rugby team, Toshiba Brave Lupus. And that was an awesome experience. Like I got hands-on coaching experience, which a lot of times you don't get at internships, and especially in the US.
You just get to watch them, don't you?
Yeah, I get to wash and clean. So that was awesome. We got to see hands-on like speed work, true change of direction, agility work also in a large setting in a different language. And so being able to like experience, like at one point I had to coach a group of like 13 players who weren't playing that game. I had to coach them through a speed session and I had no translator. It was just me, 12 Japanese players.
Nice.
So I was like, there was definitely a throat, didn't toss right into the fire moment. And I really appreciate that. And like Kier's end, that he trusts me enough to even do that with me. Some of these guys, a lot of them were national team players for Japan, stuff like that, coming off a World Cup. So like, it was almost like no pressure. These guys are the most important players on our team. They just got here from like finishing a super rugby season, stuff like that. So good luck. Don't fuck it up, essentially.
That's awesome. How did that session go?
It went all right. No one got hurt. It's funny. That was like my first week there. So the players still didn't really like know who I was. It was just, at that point, I knew absolutely zero. I had zero understanding of how to coach in a different language. So, like, I didn't speak in a different tone. I was saying cueing way too much, and players just looked, a lot of times stuck looking at me like, you gotta slow down and say less.
That's cool though. That must have been such an experience to like just sort of grow your confidence, because I always say like it's a Tim Ferriss thing, right? If you just look at what is literally the worst thing that can happen, and you would think, oh, you know, what's the worst thing that happened for me going to Japan? Or maybe getting put with like the top level pro guys that have come down from Super Rugby and being responsible for them, even though none of them can understand what I'm saying. That's like as bad as it gets. And it wasn't a bad situation at all in the end.
No, not in the slightest. Like I still talk to all those guys. It's been 3 years now. So I still talk to a lot of them, still keep up with them. I have a Sun Wolf jersey.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so that was a great experience. It was funny me even actually going to Japan. So I got an internship at North Dakota State, from Fargo, North Dakota, before the Japan one. So I saw here post the internship on his Instagram and Twitter page, and I was like, I'll apply. I won't get it. There'll be 200 people will apply for this. There's no way I'm gonna get it. Don't have like a degree yet or anything. So I apply. I'd already got accepted for the internship in North Dakota State. So I driven my car 15 hours up to North Dakota from Arkansas.
Oh, you're already there?
Yeah. So I was there. Then I have an interview my second day in Arkansas with Kier. And then a day later after the interview, I get the job at the internship in Japan. So I then tell the head strength coach or North Dakota State, like, hey, I'm sorry. I know I've been here for like 3.5 days. This opportunity has come up in Japan. I applied for it before. I was accepted here. Like, To be fair to them, he was super gracious, but he was like, completely understands that that's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Cool.
And so he gave me like his blessing essentially to leave, which I was gonna leave anyway.
Yeah.
I suppose like I wasn't gonna say no to that kind of opportunity, but I left my rent for the 3 months I was supposed to be there in my apartment on the counter, packed myself up, left the next day early in the morning, and drove 15 hours back to Arkansas to get my passport, pack a much smaller bag, and then hopped on a plane like 2 days after that.
Nice, man. Nice. Yeah. And then what would you say as a strength coach exactly was your biggest influence from that experience in Japan? Like not just the language barrier, but like as an actual like practicality that you still use in your coaching today, is there anything that you really took away from that?
I think a huge practical point for me was coaching like Matt's velocity and acceleration in like a large group setting. Because there were times like, you know, we coached, you know, all 30 players of the club, like all at one time. You know, something I hadn't experienced before, because luckily in Arkansas State, we were able to split guys up between like bats forward, stuff like that. But we didn't have that. We had a lot of time constraints in Japan that didn't allow us to do that as far as like split groups and everything for those sessions. So being able to coach those sessions, and a big one practically is like just saying what needs to be said, not all you can say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here I can't remember this term, like word economics. It's like say the absolute most important thing, then just shut the hell up after that, and allow for some self discovery at that point.
Yeah, I try and do that with my coaching. Is like it's and you said it earlier about trust as well. The fact that Kia trusted you to coach those guys, like the best coaches, they do trust a lot in both their players and their other staff members and stuff. I think the ability to trust is huge because people need to believe in themselves a little bit more, especially as athletes.
Yeah.
Believe that, you know, they can solve their own problems. They don't need to be, guided through these complicated things that they can mostly, for the most part, especially if they're good rugby athletes, they'll figure these things out themselves.
Yeah. And I think another big practical point I also learned was like from a conditioning point of view, it's just some like development, like working more on that low intensity side of like low aerobic work. Like just because it's not sexy doesn't mean it's not useful. So I think understanding that, and also understanding that you can do low aerobic work without it being like mindless running or just like on a walk bike or a spin bike for 30 minutes. Like you can be a little more creative as long as they're moving around and the heart rate's in the zones you want it to be, that 140 to 150 kind of zone for like 20, 30 plus minutes. And like job's done. The body doesn't recognize exercises, recognizes the stimulus. So as long as you're giving that stimulus to it, then.
Yeah. And when you're working like those low zones, you're working the heart as a muscle. So as long as the heart's getting that, the heart is getting through that work, why not do other skill stuff? Why not do other components whilst you're doing that? Or even just something to occupy the mind. Because sometimes, you say, just running for 40 minutes is dull as fuck.
Yeah. Like, hey, we're going to put on a walk bike for 35 minutes. It's like that'll work maybe once or twice. After that, guys are going to start to bitch a little bit.
Yeah. But and then when you get creative with it, the biggest issue I find, though, is when you get creative with those, like, sort of different scenarios and different methods of making people do low level work is to try and keep them at a low level. Cause it's so tempting for them to go balls to the wall. And you're like, no, that's not what I want at all. I want to, especially these guys that are doing rugby fitness. They're like, well, what do you mean? Does harder work not mean better? And you're like, no.
Yeah. But that was a big one. Just from a cultural point of view, in Japan, culturally with like the rugby, they want to be smashed into the wall every day. Yeah. That's just how a lot of them come up in rugby, like culturally than Japan. So a lot of players want to be like, if they're not cramping on the floor, like dry heaving, like it wasn't hard enough session.
And that's culturally with like, especially with what I do with rugby muscle. It's like, these are guys that want to know more. They want to work harder, and that's all they want to do is more excuses or different ways to work harder. And actually, especially the guys that I coach with, like one on one, I end up making them do like so much less than they've done in the past because whether that's less effort or less overall total work, but then that work is allowed to be a lot more focused.
Yep.
for sure. And then you went from there. Did you go straight from there to back? Did you go back to Arkansas again?
Yeah. I went back to Arkansas State. Finished my last year playing rugby. Last year, my degree as well. And then after that, I got accepted into the master's program at St. Mary's University in London. So down in Twickenham.
Yep.
Went there and exercise physiology, applied sport and exercise physiology, and that came about because I knew I wanted to do my master's abroad. I was torn between going to Australia or going to England. Essentially, and speaking of Kieran and I have become like really good friends, like my mentors, stuff like that. He was like, "Well, I can help you out a bit more from a connection point of view in London and England." Like, there's also, he's like, and also realistically, it's just more professional sport and jobs than you like get in Australia. He's Australia. He's like, you may be lucky to get like a low level amateur like rugby league job. He's like, that's really about it. He's like a local, like an amateur AFL club, like Australian football club, but.
Nah, fuck Australia.
And so I was like, I'm sold then. Now, I actually applied for either Cal or schools. I don't know what uni it was in Australia that I actually applied for. And then I applied for a couple in England. And it really just came down to whoever I see my acceptance from first is the one I'm going to.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the St. Mary's is first. And was on a plane like a day or two later after that.
And then from there, you worked with Richmond, right?
Yeah, I was at Richmond Rugby Club. There for 2 years, so the entire time I was in London as a strength coach. So we were there under contract with Arite Performance, which is headed up by Tom Farrow and mm-hmm. Ian Taplin, who both like to work with Kier at WAS. And so we were contracted to Richmond Rugby Club. I was there 2 seasons. Second year there, I was head of rehab, which is an awesome experience of being in those conversations with like the medical team. So being in conversation with those physios, so like that, and be able to like learn to speak that language also. Yeah. And I could learn a whole lot and just having just general chats with them. And they were here teaching me a lot, and they were able to like show me different books of what that I should read if I was interested to know more. So I found that I loved actually that side of it, of that rehab role.
Yeah, man. That would have been awesome. Did you, and what sort of like insights did you get from being head of rehab? Like, are there things that you would have overlooked or not seen as a strength coach that now like play a big role in what you do, or is it more just reinforcing what you already knew?
There was a bit of reinforcing of what I already knew, but I think a big one that I learned was I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. The intricate work you can do with the shoulder to help strengthen it, from like some of the small details, yeah. Like doing like little like isometric, doing manual resisted shoulder work, stuff like that. That's stuff I would have never even like thought about. I'd never even thought about up to that point. Of doing like manual resisted shoulder work as a way of just like almost like essentially just prep for your shoulder, like keeping shoulders healthy. It's like we don't wear pads, so
we constantly
have shoulder injuries.
Absolutely, yeah, sure. And that was probably the biggest injuries that you were dealing with, is lots of shoulder niggles and stuff.
Yeah, shoulders and like a lot, there's some calf and Achilles were big ones too, because with the strengths of Richmond Rugby Club was that it was a semi-professional team competing in a professional league. So we're in championship rugby, but the players were all part-time. So they train during a season twice a week, preseason really, preseason three times, in season twice a week. But they also all work full time. So a lot of them were bankers working in the city and stuff like that. And then they come down to Richmond to train. So dealing with that constraint of like, these guys have been sitting at a desk for 8 hours. They're sitting on a desk for 8 hours, sitting on a train for an hour. And now they have to like get ready to play rugby. Now they have to get ready to do like a speed session, a lift, and then train rugby for an hour and a half.
Yeah. That's something that I was going to ask you a little bit later, but we can bring that up now. Like, that must have been huge to try and like the difference between working with you had the Japanese guys. They're all full time, right?
So it's weird. So the way they do in Japan, that because a lot of teams are owned by large corporations, like large companies like ours, Toshiba.
Work for those.
Yeah, so some of those Japanese players. Technically worked for the company, and so like, but they work like half during the season, preseason. They work like half days. So like they'll come. Say we have a speed session at 7. We're done at 8:30. They have work at from 9 to like 1:30.
Yeah.
And most of them is like cushy jobs. Like we had one player, his job was literally to feed the goats that were on the site. that was his job.
Hell yeah.
so that wasn't as big of a deal. And because like and then all a lot of the higher level players, and all the international players we had a couple of guys from New Zealand and Australia were all full time guys.
Yeah. So then I guess what's the biggest difference that you had to sort of accommodate for when you've got these guys that are kind of full-time on a nice, good full-time schedule versus these guys that are trying to compete against other full-time athletes but are only working, you know, but are working and are only training part-time?
I think a big one for the Richmond side was adjusting to literally it's fully minimum effective dose and yes. also adding a lot of more prep stuff into like the we had low intensity days where they were like optional gym sessions, but they had the gym sessions on their phone because we like email it out to them. And so like putting a lot of extensive prep work into those sessions, a lot of hip mobility stuff, shoulder mobility, like trunk stabilization stuff, proprioception stuff, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was going more in depth on that side of it because, hey, like these guys, like we said, these guys are sitting at a desk 8 hours and commuting in 35 minutes on a tube, stuff like that. So be given in that option of like, hey, do this stuff to help you feel good between sessions. Because up until we got there, we introduced a lot of new stuff they were doing that they hadn't done before. As far as like, you know, I wrote rubber power work, so like longer conditioning, high speed running, they hadn't done any sprinting before. Like we had got there as like a company and stuff like that. So like that was all very new. So obviously initially there were lots of soreness to start off with. And just like, this isn't, I'm not trying to break you, but it's going to feel like that for a little while.
Yeah, it's just going to feel sore because your body's not used to it. It's not that it's like we're beating you into the ground. It's just like, here's something that is completely foreign. Once you start accommodating that, then you're okay kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So adding a lot of extensive prep work on those low intensity days was like really important.
Yeah, and I guess that would also be surprising to a lot of people listening that like that minimal effective dose, it's still incredibly effective. Like people always think that you have to do more and more and more.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think one of the best like quotes in that I heard from a coach was Henk Krijnhoff, coach in Amsterdam. Or in the Netherlands, I'm not sure if that's actually based in Amsterdam. It might be in Rotterdam. But he said people treat training as medicine instead of treating it as like a buffet. He's like, if you were given medicine from a doctor, you wouldn't take all of it at one time.
Yeah.
You take only what you need to take, and then you save the rest for later.
Yeah, I read a similar quote from Quinn Hennick.
Yeah, yeah.
He said the same thing, except it was like, hey, if you were if you went to a doctor and you'd had that massive, you know, reaction because of a certain drug, and then you realize that you were taking like double or triple the amount of the dose of the drug that you're supposed to take, obviously the first thing you do would be to lower that dose, not mess around on bands or do all these different extra rehab stuff, or you know, you would lower that dose. And why don't we not do the same thing with training? It's the first thing you should do.
Or us. From like a rehab side, when I see like people like, oh, you have some tendon work, and they give them like 1,700 exercises of like doing like iso holds and eccentrics, like the tendon. It's like, okay, give them one.
Yeah.
One, give them one or two to do every other day. They're not going to do it every day. Like let's be realistic with what they actually need. They don't need to be doing that much stuff every single day. Like,
for sure. Cool. All right, so you've gone from there and you're in Richmond. Now where are you based now? Are you in Texas now?
Yeah, so I'm in Texas. The way baseball works, they have like this farm system, essentially like similar to an academy. So they have like all these affiliate teams. So
the minor league?
Yeah, exactly. So my minor league team that I'm with is Corpus Christi. So I'm in south of Texas in like this port beach town. And we're affiliated. So our players, our organization is Houston Astros. So our players get promoted. Our goal is to get promoted to that team, essentially.
Yeah. And I guess, so that being completely foreign, is there anything that you've found that actually carries over good from rugby for these guys, or that they share that's just, you know, made successful baseball players and has also made successful rugby players?
I think a big one too that I've carried over from rugby to these guys is introduction of sprint work.
Yeah,
like speech is like they did none of that before, so that's all quite new. And baseball, the sport is it's on full on your feet, but it's not directly a running based sport. Obviously, because the nature of the game is just like very slow.
Yeah.
In those instances where guys do have to, run from home to first or, do a big sprint on 30 feet, stuff like that, then, or go chase a ball out in the outfield. It's like those are moments where guys have pulled hamstrings, and they do see a lot of hamstring pulls in Major League Baseball. So bringing that kind of side from rugby of like, hey, this is how we can help strengthen our hamstrings. We can sprint, work through like true speed work. We can also do things like hamstring iso holds. We don't have to do a Nordic every time. Like, there's so many other exercises we can do for hamstrings other than doing a Nordic or an RDL. So bringing that side of it is definitely helped a lot for me.
Yeah, and I guess that helps from those guys, because I was talking to Dan about this. It's like where we find the differences, or where we sort of struggle with to understand, is a lot of people. They think that just because you're doing high level work in season, that doesn't mean that that means that you're more at risk because you're doing so much high level. So in training, you don't want to just rest, do nothing. You actually want to maintain those high outputs so you don't get hurt in the games.
Yeah, so a big one that's been a culture shock for a lot of players that have here at this level anyway, for AA. So those like major league teams, the Astros, AAA, AA, High A, Low A. So at this level, these guys have all been professional baseball players for three to four years.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Dan's brought in, and what we're trying to like bring as like a staff on like the performance side, is very foreign to a lot of them in season. They used to like doing very rehab. I don't want to use the term soft, but essentially it's kind of what it was.
Yeah, just like resting the whole time, right?
Everything's recovery based. Everything's a recovery based modality. It's like, oh, you just feel good. It's like either just at that point, detraining, you're deconditioning, you're detraining, because like season's 5 months long. It's just like we can't recover for 5 months.
Yeah, and also, I actually had this conversation kind of with Mike Israetel like the other week. Is that like what happens is your most important games in any season, pretty much in any sport, are towards the end of the season. And if you aren't maintaining those high outputs during the season, then by the time the end of the season comes around, you're actually at your least, prepared to perform.
Yeah.
Because you've degraded throughout the season. You've got worse and worse and worse. And it's like, hold on here, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting guys to kind of understand that side of it has been a challenge and a task for sure. It's definitely been a hard task, just because culturally it's just not, it's not what they've been used to. In professional baseball, college, like it's just a whole new kind of field for them on the position player side. So the guys who are like your first baseman, second baseman, shortstop, those guys, outfielders, they're not used to that, because those guys play every day in professional baseball. Like there's some, like they rest, have a rotation and flight rest, but like essentially they all play every day.
Yeah.
And we have 142 games.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So what sort of difference, or what sort of thing do you think that there is potentially that like the rugby players could learn from the baseball side of things? Is there, or is it, I can't imagine that their strength and conditioning is that far behind. Like, if anything, baseball's a sport where they do all the roids. So they're probably ahead of strength and conditioning, no?
I would say baseball strength and conditioning overall, I probably say, is behind in a lot. Also, I'll probably say it's behind overall, like top to bottom. Yeah. So obviously, at the top end of baseball, you have like a Cressy who does like phenomenal work with that. We have a lot of guys in the organization who train with them. So Cressy's like the top end, or like a Mike Boyle. Obviously, had a lot of main baseball players. I think he still does. And then on a bottom end, though, it's very like, I think it's kind of similar to what you would see in like on the bottom inside of rugby training. People try to do like the transfer sport stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so as you see, there's also a lot of that. Yeah. So like, I would say there's more of that in baseball than it is in rugby. Or the other side, in baseball, you have a lot of like, oh, if you lift, it makes you it makes you throw, makes your velocity on your pitching go down, or if you lift, like it makes your bat speed slower. Or they're like, we didn't have weights back in the 70s when we play. It's like, you guys did. But so it's just you chose up to do it doesn't mean you guys didn't have it. Like,
I mean, and I think that's something you see with all sports is the old school mentality. Yeah. It's just like, why can't you motherfuckers just buy into the science? There's a real science to this now, and it's not even up for debate anymore. And then you have people on that side of things, and then you have people on the other side where they are just, you know, they're making fun Instagram workouts and stuff, and it's like trying to be hashtag functional and all that bollocks. You know?
And so I think in baseball, because it's an old sport, it's like plays for America, it's like our oldest sport, like it's over 100 years old. So because of that, you have so much of that. It's very stuck in its ways, like culturally. And there are a lot of people in a lot of organizations who are still run by like the very old school mentality of like, oh, like why do you, position players they shouldn't have to work out, but they play every day. It's like, well, playing every day isn't working out. Also, not every day you're doing something in your game. There are some games where some of you don't do anything.
Yeah.
Like if you don't get on base, you're not hitting the ball that day. Like, not many balls can hit your way. You're not just spending 3 hours just standing there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Essentially, and that's been hard for some of them to hear, but like that's just the truth of it. Sometimes, like,
yeah, it's just a shot to the ego. It's a big adjustment that they kind of have to make.
Yeah,
yeah. I found that with some of my rugby guys that like they don't want to train on a Sunday after a game Saturday, but I'm like, you were on the wing and you did nothing, so we've got to get you in and we've got to get you working. Or, you know, we even have a lot of guys that do extras. You know, right at the final whistle because they prepared for it. Why not get your extras in then?
Yeah,
you know, and it's a weird thing to see because you it's so far away from what you would expect, but it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, that like a big one for like the only pitchers, the old school one is like, oh, you just for pitchers, you just need to run. That's all you gotta do. Just run more. if you lift, make your velocity go down. Don't lift. It's bad for your shoulder. Just gotta run, always running. It's like, well, if always running, it's like, man, you gotta pitch off a mound, and like that's brutal on your body. It's so much force you're having to push it down a mound. It's so much force absorbing on one leg as well. Like, we can't all need you to run for 20 minutes day after pitching. But if you want to do something, some little like cardiac flush, we can do 15 minutes on a watt bike at a low level, just like get your blood flowing. Plus, I feel like. I don't need him to run 20 minutes day after he pitches. and then he complains why the knees hurt. It's like, oh, yeah, it made sense.
Yeah, it can be brutal. And I think that old school mentality of you just got to run, that reminds me of like, you see it in boxing a lot. You know,
the road work.
Yeah, they love the road work. And it's just like, why? Why are you putting those extra strain on your joints? Or even the best old school mentality from boxing, actually, though, is people that just cut out water.
I train a boxer and I train some MMA guys, and that's one of my boxers. He was telling me about some of the conditioning he's done, and he would want to do more conditioning in like our sessions, and I just told him, I was like, man, it's like you're doing more than enough conditioning. Like, I'd rather do much less of that. because he would have boxing sessions for 2-3 hours. He's like professional fighter, and then they have 25 hill sprints, something like that. I'm just like, then he come last. But most of our sessions with him and me twice a week were just like prep recovery. Like, let's get you feeling good after this.
Yeah, like, let's get you back training hard again.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So, I guess that'd be quite a nice little area to touch in. So, you said about how those pitchers and just in general in baseball can be brutal on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And we've already discussed how that happens with rugby. So is there anything that like any good advice you can have to guys that want to kind of, I hate the word bulletproof their shoulder, but you know, for people that want to do that and want to maintain,
I think,
healthy shoulders.
A big thing that I will definitely take into, like, if I were to go back into rugby, individual, like people who want, who like rugby players who want like to train with me and stuff like that, will definitely be like developing a shoulder prep routine. Like in baseball, I call it arm care. And so, like, taking that kind of idea and principle to a sport like rugby, I think would be, like, it's like a, not a gold mine, but I think it'd be great for a lot of rugby players. And it's basically just, like, having a set, like, this is your routine. Maybe you have two or three different, like, different shoulder prep routines that you do every day, like, religiously. Some, a lot of players have, like, they'll have shoulder one and have a hip one.
Yeah.
And so that's what baseball is really great at. It's like they're big on, and we big on preaching that, like from a, even on sports medicine side as well. It's like you guys at this point in your career, you need to have a routine that keeps you healthy, keeps you feeling good. You need to be religious and stringent about it in the sense that you need to do it every day. Even for on the road, you need to find a way to do something towards it. If you can't do it the exact way you do it at home, on the road, it's like you need to have a plan B for on the road, but still need to do your prep work in. Because that's what's going to keep you healthy in the long run.
And what are some examples of the stuff that's in this arm care?
So manual shoulder work's a big one. A lot of different like banded work. It's like your basic stuff a lot of times. Like your external rotations, your internal rotations, your shoulder like pails and rails stuff like build FRC kind of stuff. Like your dead hanging, like doing like extra forearm work, stuff like that. But those little things that you easily just skip over. Like a big doing things like hands on a valve slide, like one hand on a valve slide, other hand on the floor, and it's like sliding your arm out different angles.
Yep.
Hand on a door on a wall, and moving your arm to different angles with a ball, stuff like that. Like doing oscillatory work with a ball, like a weighted ball.
Yeah. Like so what would that look like?
Oscillatory work with a weighted ball. So essentially, you go like weighted ball in your hand. You're holding the ball facing downward. And like you're just doing like almost like perturbations like in different at different angles, different of the shoulders. So you're like overhead, out in front, out to the side, under. Maybe you go. Some guys go 10 seconds or so, like just continuous as fast as they can. Like this weighted ball, and it's usually like a ball. It's like a sand. I like sand weighted, so like that movement with the sand too.
Yeah. So then it gets even more stability.
Yeah.
In that, that's nice. I like that a lot. Yeah, I do a lot of shoulder work against the walls and stuff. So you do the behind, you know, you just do the shoulder press again with your back up against the wall.
Yeah.
I like that one. I like the one where you're facing the wall and you've got your forearms both against it. You can walk your arms up and down or out to the, you do flies and try and control that scapula. I think those things are huge. And
yeah,
I think one of the other things that people do, especially guys that like aren't professional athletes, is do some sort of pressing where your shoulder, your scapulas are allowed to move. So traditionally, when everyone is trying to work their chest muscles, they're trying to work their pecs, they'll always be lying down. So whether that's a floor press or a bench press or a dumbbell bench press, doesn't really matter. But by lying down, you've got your scapula sort of stuck, so your shoulder blades stuck in a position, and they don't really move as freely. Whereas if you're doing push-ups, which is like one of the biggest valuable things that you can do, or why push-ups are so valuable, is because those scapula that your shoulder blades can move back and forward. And I'm doing it now as I'm talking through it. I'm like pushing my arms back and forward, and I'm feeling my shoulder blades go back and forward because that's what they're supposed to do. Whereas when you're lying back on a bench, then that causes a bunch of other issues with the shoulder as well.
Yeah, and we do things called it's called scap push-ups essentially, where you hold a position and just like move our scapula back and forth, like.
Yeah, so you keep your arms locked out and then just sort of shrug your scaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, and different variations of shrugs, those things, those are really good. And face pulls as well are great for the shoulders.
Yeah.
I found I had one dude once that I used to live with him, and he like as standard, he was like, yeah, this is just a normal thing that happens to me. His shoulder would dislocate three or four times every season. Like he'd be like, oh, yeah, that's me, you know, and he would take a couple weeks out, keep strapping that shoulder up, and that would just be like what that was normal for him. I was like, there's no fucking way that should be normal. Let's try and get him stronger. And all we did was add in, I think, two sets of face pulls every gym session, and it never popped out. And then as soon as he got away from it, guess what? His shoulder blade started popping out again, going back to the same issues. But yeah, it's a strange one, man. It's a strange one. And we've touched on this like years ago when we first started doing the podcast with Alex and myself, and we were saying about how the shoulder is like, it's it's great because it can do so many things, but it's such a joint that's susceptible to all kinds of injuries because of what it can do. It's essentially like, it sticks with me that Alex always used to say it was like it's like having a golf ball on a saucer and then just trying to move that golf ball all around. Like eventually that's going to have some sort of issues, right?
Yeah. That's the greatest right now, just watch a golf ball on a saucer. I like that.
Yeah, you can use that. You can use that with your guys.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, man. Another thing I want to touch on is that, so you don't compete yourself anymore in a sport, but since quitting, I guess essentially quitting rugby, or having a mini retirement, we'll call it, you've proceeded to lose a shit ton of weight. And I thought it'd be good to have you sort of talk us through that and your experience with that.
Essentially, came out to, I was done playing rugby, at least for the time being anyway. I moved over to England, and then I was just like, I might as well try. I was like, I'm not playing properly anymore. So I was played loose head, played a bit of tight head, but playing loose head. I was like, I might as well just get back down to basketball was my main sport growing up.
Oh.
I might as well try to see if I can get back down to that weight. And then eventually just kept going. I think a big one for me wasn't so much, was just more like just non-exercise activity, which was quite easy to do in London because I didn't have a car. So
I'm walking everywhere.
I think I averaged, looked at it a couple weeks ago. I looked back on, I was usually just like using like my little health app on my iPhone. It was like, I was averaging like anywhere from 12,000 to 14,000 steps a day.
Nice.
Just like, just not even thinking, that's just me like walking to the bus stop, getting on a bus, like walk, like coaching, being on my feet, walking around, walking uni from my apartment and stuff like that. Like,
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what did you weigh at the beginning? What was your total sort of poundage loss?
A couple of days before I left, to go to England, I was 274.
Mm-hmm.
And then, at that point, that had been like the heaviest I'd been. So I was done playing rugby now for like a couple months at that point and still eating the same, clearly. but no idea doing as much running. Yeah. It just lifted. And So got to England at like 270 or so. Then was down to 205.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 60 pounds. How long did that take?
I started like seriously in October. And then I hit 205. It took me like 6 months or so.
Nice.
It came off quite quickly. Maybe too quickly. I don't know. Like, it's not. Like,
yeah. And what did you do to do that?
Added more. So in the early stages, so I wanted to get back into running more. So I wanted to get back to playing rugby, and like playing like basketball too. But being 260 plus, I didn't play rugby at that weight. I played rugby like 250.
Mm-hmm.
Being 260, 275, like I couldn't run. But I could run a little bit, but like joints hurt, ankles hurt, knees hurt. Bad flare up 2 minutes into it. So could barely even do like tempo runs for an extended period of time. So adding like hop on a walk bike for starting off at 20 minutes, eventually working my way up to like 40 minutes, like every other day, like just at night or morning, just never I could fit it in. Like which is easy when you're working at Richmond Rugby Club and I have like some clients and stuff like that during the day. So I can always just fit it in anytime I want.
Yeah, so just low-level aerobic work to begin with.
Yeah, and then adjusting diet. I went no refined sugar for like a month, which that was more just a mental thing. I just want to see if I could do it. There's no magic. No one hear that and think there's a magical science to it. It's literally just because like I want to see if I could do it. I think a big thing was also like a mindset change on my part of like now no longer seeing myself as a big guy. It's like I've spent most of my life being like always like stocky, just as naturally am. But up until I started playing prop, I was 220 or less all the time.
Yeah.
And then started playing prop and got folded my first game at loose head, and I was like, I need to gain some weight. Mm-hmm. So that was a big one, just adding low level aerobic work, you know, four times a week or so. diet change is obviously a huge factor. Like, people don't like to hear that, but it is. So just in, like, finding out my calories, what they were. I didn't track too religiously in the early stages. So I was like, I just need to see the scale move downward. Yeah, like, sure. For me, it helps with like a mental point of view. I just need to see the scale move down and see the number on the scale move down. So I was weighing myself every other day, and it's like putting it in my phone, which I wouldn't. That's all person to person, right? So like, some people that worked really well for, other people will get quite neurotic about that. For me, it worked really well because it kept me on track. It's like, oh, I'm up 4 pounds today. So that could be, I think the week I'm on average up, 2 or 3 pounds. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have gone out and had a big bender, like a bunch of my mates. So like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have ordered that pizza at 2 a.m. Like,
yeah, I think there is a point where people can get neurotic with it, especially with people that like have already lost their weight and don't like, you know, and want to sort of, they've already lost their weight and now it's no longer healthier for them to carry on losing weight and they want to gain muscle. Like, then, you know, sometimes it's easy to the scale to fuck off, but it's such a good accountability measure for either fat loss, because it's, you know, you just want to see it trending in a direction that you want it, or for a slower sort of like smarter muscle gain is, again, you don't want to see it just go, you don't want to gain 10 pounds in the first 2 weeks of your massing cycle, because you ain't gaining 10 pounds of muscle that quickly.
I'll tell you that right now. Yeah. And then, that was a big one. So I'm tracking, making myself accountable to, like, I just put it in my notes on my phone, 260 today or 258 today, every other day, I'd weigh myself. Then once I was able to get some more like weight off enough where I could like run, then I was like adding more. Then I was adding running because I quite like running. Like, I just like doing tempo runs, aerobic power runs, stuff like that. Like, I hate a bike. I hate watt bike, spin bike. Pretty much any off feet condition, it bores the life out of me. So that was quite nice. And then gym wise, I don't lift more than 3 to 4 times a week anyway, just because joints have to feel a bit achy, feel a bit beat up. So I just don't tend to. So nothing really changed on that end from like a programmer point of view or anything like that. I bounce around different programs based on kind of how I was feeling. Eventually, I started paying attention to more of my macros as it got later.
Yeah.
And as I probably got to like 230, 220 range, as I started paying attention more from like a body comp point of view. Because it was like, I lost the weight, but then I was like, oh, I needed to. Like, now I want things to look differently. Now I want more definition, more better body comp. So then I started paying attention to like my protein, carbs, fat, things like that.
Yeah. So it was a nice, it was, even though it was done relatively quickly, like it was a quite a quick weight loss for the amount that you did, it was still like bigger picture, like, and you gradually got more and more advanced with it as you go. You didn't really, so apart from doing the conditioning work that just kind of helped you prep for your sport, you didn't really adjust the training, particularly the weights. You didn't do like anything overly crazy with the weights. It was just more diet. And I think what you said about the non-exercise activity is huge as well. So just the walking, the low level stuff, like, because I always find that that's the secret, man. If there is a secret to fat loss, it's that, because it doesn't, like, whereas if you're doing really intense training sessions, like that shit actually makes you a lot hungrier. Whereas if you just walk around a lot, you don't notice that. And you don't think, oh, I've got to fuel that and do all that sort of stuff. And it doesn't eat into your recovery either.
Yeah. I've been with 2 hours. Sometimes, because of the time difference, I just don't want to call like family or friends, stuff like that, like back in the US. So like at night sometimes, I'll just go for like, intentionally on purpose, like thinking about it, like go on 30, 45 minute walk, just like around the neighborhood, like around Tokyo, Richmond, stuff like that, just because I'm on the phone. Like,
that's massive. Yeah. Yeah. That's huge, man. And that's cool. And have you since, kept all that weight off? How are you doing now?
We're on a bulking phase. I want to see if I could see how strong I could get and still be like relatively lean ish. So I got back up to like 220, down to 220 now. And then now didn't really work. Didn't really get that much. Didn't notice it'll be stronger. Like that was anything relatively important. And then, sorry, I want to fully try to get back into playing rugby and trying to go for a bit of bobsled maybe in like 2 years or so too. So
Yeah,
so I'm gonna go back down to 205. So I was just at 220. I'm besides the bench press, I'm just as strong at 205. Like my squat and everything, squat power, like an RSI, like everything else is just as good. 200, 205, and is it 220? I'm faster at 205.
Yeah, because you've got less weight to carry.
Yeah, jump higher. But like strength wise, I'm essentially the same. So I was like, no point in being 220 then. So I might as well go back down to a 5.
I like it a lot. Cool, man. That's awesome. All right, let's start to wrap this up. So we'll go into what 4 questions that I ask everyone, kind of quick fire round, I guess. Favorite supplement?
Favorite supplement.
For you or for your athletes? Yeah.
I'm not a huge supplement guy. So I don't have a favorite supplement. I'll say if my favorite supplement, I'll maybe go. I've had to say one. I'll go caffeine.
Ah, hell yeah! As I'm drinking my black coffee as we speak.
Yeah. I don't think it's like it's no secret of supplements.
No, absolutely not. And actually, like you won't believe it. Like you will 100% believe it. Like every single guest we've had on, like experts from all around the world. None of them have gone, oh, it's actually this or this or this. You know, some of them have said bath, some of them have said food. Like, no one's really given me a good, like, oh, this is the one supplement. So,
yeah,
go figure.
Yeah, exactly. Like caffeine's great. And that's like food, sleep.
Yeah, the basics. That no one wants to hear that, though. That's not a fancy thing that they can buy. And
doesn't sell. What we need to do is make like a food sleep supplement seminar or certification, and people would 100% buy into it.
Yes, I'm actually no, because there's people coming out now. There's all those books. I read that book, like The Importance of Sleep or Why We Sleep. And you're like, I'm like, fuck. Every time I'm like, right, I need to get back to my 8 hours every single time. All right, favorite gym movement.
Favorite gym movement. I'd say a bat squat. So I'm the best at that.
That's the most. That's the one I see you always doing on your Instagram. Yeah, for sure.
That's the one I'm good at. bench is shit.
Favorite food.
Steak.
Steak.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that. And then who's going to win the World Cup this year?
Say again.
Who's going to win the World Cup this year?
World Cup this year. I'm gonna go New Zealand. The final will be New Zealand, England.
Oh,
I'm going to New Zealand in a very close one.
As an Englishman, I'll take that. I'll take us getting to the final. That'd be good enough. Yeah, man. Awesome. All right, cool. It's been great having you on, TK. Where can if people want to find more from you, they want to learn from you anymore. Plug away. Where can people follow you and find out more about you and what you do?
Instagram is T Kennel Phys Prep. So that's what I'm posting on Instagram all the time. Twitter, which I also post a lot on, is let me put up the bunch of my Twitter handle is. It's just TK Phys Prep. So both essentially the same. Those are the best places to reach out to me. In terms of learn more, talk to me. I'm always for a good chat or anything like that. Like, you can shoot me an email also at this my first terrenceakennel@gmail.com. Like, someone shoot me an email, ask me a question.
I'll get the boys to try and reach out to you. terrenceakennel@gmail.com.
Terrence A, letter A.
Kennel@gmail.com. @gmail.com. Cool, man. I'll put that all in the show notes. Guys, definitely give him a follow. Like, I love your Instagram's so good because your stories, man, you just repost good shit all day, every single day. And I'm like, yeah, man. It's good, except that now I've got that limit on my IG where I'm trying to limit to like 30 minutes a day or something. And then that timer comes up. It's like 10 a.m. and it's like, shit, I've already done my daily consumption.
I didn't know you could do that. I want you to try that.
Yeah, it's cool. It's in the settings section. There's like you can limit your use of it. And but I don't know. It depends. It depends how long I'm on the toilet for each day, I guess. That's the biggest influence. All right, man. It's been great having you on, and we'll catch up soon.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate you having me, mate.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this or any other episode of the Rubbing Muscle Podcast, please feel free to share it with your friends or teammates. It's something, the little things like that that you can do that really do help the show grow. And the more we grow, the more we can help you guys out. Another thing that you can do is go ahead and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That only takes about 20 seconds. And again, it helps us grow and helps us spread the podcast to people that need it. If you're interested in stepping up your training, then visit rugby-muscle.com where you can pick up 50 free rugby conditioning sessions, or you can join Team Rugby Muscle where you get world-class strength and conditioning delivered directly to your phone. That's rugby-muscle.com for more information on all of that. Thank you guys for so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.